This is Bill Tiller of Tiller.org. You're listening to BBSRadio.com. Don't forget to tune in to The Infinite Consciousness with Eva Herr every Sunday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Enjoy.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and tonight I have with us Dr. Marilyn Sorensen, and we're going to be talking about self-esteem and her fabulous book, Breaking the Chain of Low Self-Esteem. How are you, Dr. Sorensen?
I'm fine, thank you.
Thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
So before we get started, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about you and where to find you and your books?
Okay. Well, I'm a clinical psychologist, and I actually live in Portland, Oregon, and I run the Self-Esteem Institute, and I do therapy here, and I have a recovery program for low self-esteem that I'm sure we'll talk more about, and I also work with by phone with people across the states and in quite a few other countries, so I kind of have an international clientele right now. I've written 5 books plus co-authored a 6th one, and the one that's out now and then the kind of meat and potatoes book is Breaking the Chain of Low Self-Esteem, and it's out in its 2nd edition. People could reach me at getesteem.com, so it'd be www.getesteem.com. My phone number is 503-941-9433. I think that's kind of the basics.
This is an excellent book. You know, I told you that I try to have people on my show that can offer people something at home to do for whatever their problems are. And I was looking for a self-esteem person, and this is a fabulous book.
Thank you.
It really is. It's easy to understand. Even my teenager could understand it.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we start off, tell us, how do you define self-esteem?
Well,
to get started.
Okay, well, self-esteem is the view that you have of yourself. So low self-esteem, then, is the view that you have of yourself as inadequate, undeserving or unworthy, incompetent, where the definition of regular self-esteem is just how you feel about yourself in those areas. So a person with healthy self-esteem would feel generally adequate, not perfect or anything, but adequate, and they would feel that they were worthy, that they were lovable, and that they were competent, at least in some areas of their lives, where the person with low self-esteem would have problem in one or all of those, possibly, areas.
How does it start? How does someone, is it something that you're born with, or something happened to make you have it?
Yeah, something happens to make you have that. We see people who are shy, And that is something that people are kind of born with, and it's more of an introversion issue where people are just a little reticent and don't like to be in groups and just tend to stand back. But that's not low self-esteem. That's a very different thing. Low self-esteem develops in childhood, always in childhood, because it's the basic way that we first learn to view ourselves and to recognize whether or not we're going to fit into the world. So I think of it as a filtering system in which we have this filter when we have low self-esteem that filters out positive and only remembers or hangs on to the negative, where healthy self-esteem is the opposite. And when I say that it starts in childhood, I mean that based on the way the child is treated by those people around them, especially the most significant, and often the parents, but it can be siblings and it can be other relatives, other people that have somehow affected the child's development. But if the child is mistreated, abandoned, criticized a lot, isn't shown affection, is abused in some way, that child will grow up thinking that there's something wrong with them innately. And from that, they'll have this feeling of inadequacy.
Or is it strict? Does strict parents have anything to do with it, or just...
It could be a strict parent, and each child responds differently. So that, plus parents parent differently with the first child than they do the second or third child.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to get more relaxed, and not be quite as strict if that were the case. But a lot of it is really that, people with low self-esteem come from dysfunctional homes. Oftentimes their own parents had low self-esteem. That was the case for me.
Mm-hmm.
Both of my parents had low self-esteem, and I grew up with low self-esteem.
Yeah, I can relate. I have low self-esteem, too. It's kind of funny, though, because people that know me, mm-hmm. if they view me out in the world, my girlfriends will say, Eva, you're the strongest woman I know.
Right, right.
And I think to myself, oh, my God, if you could just see me behind closed doors.
Uh-huh, right. Or if they could see what you feel on the inside some of the times. And that was the case with me, I mean, through my younger years and when I taught school for 7 years. And I was always trying to help the kids feel better about themselves along mm-hmm. with, you know, helping them be good at whatever they were doing, but giving them a sense of achievement. But I then found out that that alone just wouldn't do it. And but I was kind of the same thing as you. You know, I have tended to be an overachiever, probably have achieved more than I would have if I hadn't had low self-esteem because I was so driven mm-hmm. to, you know, prove myself. And so people would not have looked at me or still today and say, oh, come on, you never had low self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I did have low self-esteem, and it took me a very long time to work through that.
Why is it that we tend to be such overachievers and so driven like that? Why?
Well, when you grow up feeling like you're, you know, you feel like you're being criticized. In my case, it was a lot of criticism,
uh-huh.
and so I tried to find ways to show that I really was adequate. You know, it's like I couldn't deal with that feeling of people not thinking that I was okay or whatever. So, you know, I set out to prove to myself and to other people that that was the case. Now, as many people become underachievers as overachievers, and I remember telling a friend of mine years and years ago, I said, you're really an underachiever. And she said, well, that's pretty insulting. And I said, no, I said, I'm not saying that you can't achieve. I'm saying that I think you're capable of doing a lot more than you are. I think you're underachieving. And she said, oh, you know, that was a different picture.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and it used to be back in the early days when self-esteem was popular that we thought and the schools thought that people with low self-esteem would not be achievers. So they looked at everybody that had low self-esteem and or didn't achieve and thought, well, this person probably has low self-esteem. Or if they thought they had low self-esteem, they didn't expect much of them. And, you know, and so they kind of ignored the people that the kids that were being overachievers, that were trying to be the good kids, who really also had low self-esteem.
Why is it that we have trouble accepting praise or compliment?
Oh, yeah.
I know I do. I always make up an excuse for it.
Okay. Well, I think the thing is that if you feel inadequate, you know, years ago I would sing a solo somewhere. I was a music teacher. And I would recognize that I made maybe a little error somewhere in the song, but nobody else would really notice it. So when they would come up afterwards and compliment me, in my mind I'm thinking, yeah, but if you really knew, you'd realize that I didn't do quite so well. I mean, I always found a way to discount it. Because we really don't believe ourselves. If we really feel that we're inadequate and we're not acceptable in some way, then when people try to show us that they like what we've done or what we've accomplished or, you know, something that they see in us, we can't accept it. And so we try to rationalize out that, you know, they just don't know. But the other thing is we project onto other people the negative attitudes we have about ourselves when we have low self-esteem. And so our tendency is to think that they don't really mean it.
Okay.
We think that they really see us the way we see us.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we're
just trying to be nice.
They're making fun of us.
Uh-huh. Is OCD a characteristic of low self-esteem?
Well, there are some obsessive compulsive behaviors that can go along with low self-esteem, but it's not really full-blown OCD. It's that perfectionistic attitude of needing to do everything right that can look like OCD.
So what is the difference? Because I see that in myself. I'm a perfectionist, and I thought it was OCD because that was the only label I'd ever heard.
Well, I think it's the degree.
Oh, okay.
You know, we try to do things in order to be acceptable. People with OCD are driven by another force, so to speak.
Okay, that makes sense to me.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. What about
post-traumatic stress syndrome? Are people with low self-esteem more likely to have that?
I don't know that they would be more likely, because it depends on everybody's so different. It depends on everybody's background. So that, you know, if the person with low self-esteem was severely abused as a child, they will have post-traumatic stress syndrome in all likelihood, and that will be at that point either primary or secondary to the low self-esteem.
So I read somewhere that I keep in touch with Stanley Krippner a lot, and he's doing research with that. And I read something where kids who get abused when they're a child, whether it's emotional or physical, have post-traumatic stress syndrome and are more likely to get it if they get older and go to war or get in some event that upsets them later in life.
Well, I think until people go through recovery from low self-esteem, it does stay with you, and so it does have that effect, so that, you know, then it would be kind of like a reoccurrence of a traumatic situation and would probably bring it all up again. So I think that that would be very likely the case.
You talk about floaters and paddlers in your book. What do you mean by that?
Right. Well, you know, I think of floaters as there are people that have low self-esteem that kind of just go with the flow. They take life as it comes to them. They kind of sit back and wait for life to happen. And they don't do a whole lot about changing their circumstances. And I think those are floaters, people that just float through life and don't put forth the energy, maybe don't have the perseverance, haven't learned to bounce back from things. And versus the paddlers, who I think are people who are out there striving to change their lives and better their lives. Now, some of these people read every self-esteem or self-help book on the shelves, and I'm not saying that that's the answer, but that would be me. That would be an example of a person who's a paddler. People who are trying to learn, people who are trying to change things, people who are getting therapy, people who are going out there and saying, okay, I'm not doing so well here, I'm going to get some help. And who give themselves a chance to change their lives and improve their lives. I think those are the paddlers. They're trying to get somewhere.
Do all people magnify complaints or criticisms like people with low self-esteem?
No.
Is that something that we've learned or we conditioned, or
yes,
how does that come
about? It's like, okay, inside of us we feel inadequate or incompetent or unlovable. And so if, let's say, a couple are dating and the one breaks up with the other one, the one who got broken up with, if that person has low self-esteem, may decide I'm unlovable. Not just this one person doesn't love me, but I'm unlovable. And everything gets magnified. It's like, plus, people with low self-esteem are hypersensitive and hypervigilant. So they're overly sensitive to a criticism. They, you know, it's all or nothing thinking. So that if you're criticizing or saying I'm not doing something well, you're saying I don't do anything well. That's how magnified it gets. If you're saying that I made a mistake, I'm thinking I'm worthless. If you're saying, you know, really don't want to date me, then I guess I'm unlovable. I mean, it just gets immediately, just within a few seconds, or maybe a second or less, it just gets just mammoth. It just gets so big.
Yeah. I've got another list of questions. I mean, a few more questions, and then I want to go into what we can do about it. I want to get all these questions out. So I'm afraid I won't come back to them if I don't. The irrational worry about losing what we have or what we've achieved, what is that all about? I mean, why do we think we can't hold on to it or it's going to be taken away?
Well, once again, it goes back to that feeling that we're really insufficient. And so it's also the feeling that we're only lucky. So I was at a conference once several years ago. I was sitting by a young man who was a psychologist, but he was just new to the profession. And I asked him how his practice was going, and he said, well, he said, it's going really, really well. But he said, that really scares me. And I said, okay, well, tell me what about that scares you? And he said, well, I'm afraid it won't last. And there's that fear that we can't maintain success because of feeling that we're really flawed in some way.
Mm-hmm.
There's something really wrong with us. And so if things are going well in our lives, it must be just because we're lucky. Well, luck is going to run out at some point. So we have difficulty believing that we can sustain things.
Yeah, I can see that. What about energy levels? Does it affect energy levels?
It can affect energy level in either direction. I think that people who become overachievers often have high energy and often become workaholics.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that drive within them. And the same way that people who are underachievers or who are passive, I think low self-esteem really does, it reduces their energy, and oftentimes they're depressed, they're discouraged, and they don't have a lot of motivation, their creativity is depressed, and they just don't believe that they can do better than they're doing.
Speaking of depression and low self-esteem, is it chemical or is it mental or is it both? Does one bring on the other?
Well, I don't think that it's chemical, and I don't think that people with low self-esteem generally need medication. Of course, I can't prescribe medication because I'm not a psychiatrist or a medical doctor, but I don't find that my clients generally need medication at all. And they're only under circumstances where they are severely, severely depressed to where they're almost non-functional. Then I may send them out somewhere to get temporarily on some medication. But no, I don't think that it's chemical. I think that it's all in the mind. It's the feeling of worthlessness, feeling of failure, feeling like you can't succeed in life, and the fear. There's this fear, constant anxiety and fear of making a mistake, of looking bad, of somebody seeing you make a mistake, you know, of not being able to sustain, just as we just talked about. So this fear and anxiety is just within a person all the time when they have low self-esteem.
Mm-hmm. You also talk about memory loss. How does that happen, and why does it happen? Does it happen to block it out?
Well, you know, it happens because a person gets so upset or so anxious that at a certain moment, it's almost like an out-of-body experience where they don't know what's really happening. I had a client years ago who was a nurse, and she worked in this hospital. She was a surgical nurse, and she had terrible, terrible self-esteem. She had been abused as a child, sexually abused by a business person at a business near her home, and repeatedly, and never did ever tell anybody. And anyway, so she was at work one day, and they had a monthly party in which they would name the worker of the month. And that person, they had a cake and a plaque and so forth. And so this whole group of nurses are in there, and the guy comes in, and he calls out. He says, you know, gives this little speech. He calls out her name. Now, she cannot believe this. And she just totally, she just sat there. It's just like she didn't hear it. And everybody around her was saying, get up there, go up there, go on up there, you know. He called your name. And finally, she got up and went up there. And she's just a remarkable woman. And she started, they said, well, you know, I gave her the presentation, gave her the plaque and everything. And he said, why don't you say a few words? And so I guess that she started, you know, telling some jokes about work and stuff. And they were all but rolling on the floor laughing because she was wonderful, had a wonderful sense of humor. And then afterwards, they went in and had cake and stuff. And she became just totally frightened because she could not remember one thing that she had said. It was so overwhelming for her that she just absolutely forgot everything. And she was afraid to ask anybody because, you know, she was afraid then they would tell her. She wasn't sure if they were laughing with her or at her.
Oh,
and she never could recall what she had said.
Shame. So What do you use? Another word that's in your book. You talk about identifying triggers. What do you mean? What are triggers?
Well, what are the things that cause you to have a self-esteem attack? I guess I should talk about self-esteem attacks first. When something happens, let's say we're out in public somewhere and we do something or we say something that we immediately think was a mistake. Or we're at a party and we spill something on the person's carpet or something. Anyway, whatever it is, we do something that we think almost like nobody else would do this. And we have all this instant humiliation and embarrassment and remorse, and we feel just terrible about ourselves, and our heart starts racing, and we do this fight or flight thing, which is, you know, we just want to get out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're at a party, we might make an excuse to leave, and we try to act normal, like nobody can see us, that we're upset about anything or that anything has happened, and then the person will leave the party, go home, and shut themselves in their house, pull down all the shades, maybe turn off the lights, not answer the phone. And this is a self-esteem attack. They're just beside themselves.
Well, that can really affect one's life.
And everyone is laughing at them.
That would be a horrible way to live.
Yes. And people with low self-esteem have self-esteem attacks many times a day, or at least daily or weekly. And my goal for them is that by the end of recovery, they would seldom ever have a self-esteem attack. If they did, they could control it within 10 minutes. Now, I don't think anybody can promise them anything more than that, because there are always these triggers. Now we go back to the triggers. What are the things that have happened in the past that would come up immediately in a similar situation? So a trigger is anything that would start a self-esteem attack. So let's say that the last time I had sung a solo, I'd done a terrible job, thought I'd never sing a solo again, and I'm somewhere and somebody says, why don't you start us up singing some songs? And then I think, oh, you know, the trigger would be the last time that I sang that I thought I did poorly. And so then I might immediately have a self-esteem attack. So a trigger can be anything. Triggers can be a word that somebody says, a look in which we decide that they're thinking certain things about us, or they're looking at us in a certain way. Any of those can be triggers.
Or you also talk about neediness and codependency. Do they walk hand in hand with self-esteem?
Very much. You know, people who are needy, well, most of us have experienced someone in our lives who's really needy, who kind of glomps onto us, and they want us to make decisions for them. They want us to be there, kind of to hold their hand through life. And it's not something that draws people to you when you're needy. It's something that kind of repels them. And so this neediness is, I think, some of the most depressed people, and the people that have the poorest social skills really do have a neediness. But when you have low self-esteem, you feel so alone because nobody really understands. Society doesn't understand. They say, get over it. You know, you shouldn't think that. You shouldn't say that. You shouldn't feel that way. Well, you know, if people could just get over self-esteem, you know, we wouldn't have all these millions and millions of people that have low self-esteem.
All right, one more question, then I want to get into what we can do about it.
Okay.
You talk about quiet and noisy reactors.
Yes, uh-huh.
What is that?
Well, I think there are the people who react in anger. They react defensively. They're more likely to, you know, defend themselves, to argue, to get angry, to really feel put upon, to really feel like you're mistreating them, and they're very distrustful, and they're loud. You know, that's the noisy thing. They tend to react in a loud way.
How do you tell the difference between, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt
you. No, go right ahead.
Between someone that's bipolar and when they act and low self-esteem and this quiet and noisy reactors?
Well, I think that a lot of people are misdiagnosed as bipolar who really just have low self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people are misdiagnosed for different disorders that really have low self-esteem.
Well, after reading your book, I have to agree with you.
I really think that, but low self-esteem can be so severe that it can look like borderline behavior. So it really bothers him to me that low self-esteem gets misdiagnosed as often as it does. And very few therapists know how to treat low self-esteem or even understand what it is.
I've never really had anybody. Your book is one of those where you go, yes, somebody understands.
Well, that's what readers tell me. I get emails several a week from somebody saying, how did you know this about me?
Uh-huh.
You know, you wrote this book about me. Were you following me around?
Right.
Sitting
right
on my shoulder?
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm fortunate to have, you know, I've spent 30 years trying to figure this all out. And I think that I was fortunate to be able to recognize patterns in people with low self-esteem that others have not ever recognized before. And
you have
so
a
I
guest.
It speaks to
guess.
People. But let me finish about the quiet reactors.
Okay.
The quiet
Sorry.
Reactors are people that tend to distance themselves. They tend to avoid to begin with, and then they distance themselves. So in a situation, they would tend to be quiet, not be willing to talk things out. They become passive. They withdraw, and they isolate, and they respond to their anxiety and fear with this quietness, which makes it very difficult. You know, if your partner or somebody in your life that your spouse, you know, won't discuss what the issue is, even a good friend or a coworker, but they won't talk about it. They just withdraw and become, you know, depressed and morose. Well, there's not a whole lot you can do to solve the problems. So they're both problematic, whether noisy or quiet.
I do have one more question.
Sure.
How do we recognize low self-esteem versus ego or vanity in other people? Do you know what I mean by that relationship?
Well, it's like maybe you're talking about narcissism, for instance.
Yeah.
You know, I think that that's another thing. I think people with low self-esteem can look like narcissists because there's two sides of people with low self-esteem. There's the side of me that thinks I'm pretty good at what I do. There's the side of me when I had low self-esteem that thought I really wasn't very good. And so there's this side and there's the other side. There's the side that can look arrogant, for instance, and in the same person, they can look totally opposite the next day. But so, you know, they can also be, you know, bipolar, borderline. A lot of borderlines are really people with low self-esteem. I'm trying to remember exactly what your question was. I think I've
got. Oh, how do we recognize or distinguish low self-esteem versus
right.
ego or vanity?
Well, if you know the symptoms, if you understand what low self-esteem is, and on my website, in fact, we're redoing the website right now. In a couple of weeks, it's going to be completely kind of redone, some of the pages. But it lists all the symptoms that are symptoms of low self-esteem. And those people who are narcissists really think they're great. They think they're better than other people. That's not low self-esteem. Low self-esteem inside, people feel inadequate. Now, they may become workaholics and become very competent in what they do, but that's usually to avoid social skills and social issues where they would need good social skills, I should say, so that they work, because they are accomplished there. They get compliments, they get awards, they get recognition, mm-hmm. where in their social lives, which is the hardest thing to manage, they feel like a failure. You know, there's no recipe or cookbook for how to do relationships. There's all these books out there on them, but they're not very practical, a lot of them. Not very realistic to each situation. And especially with people with low self-esteem, because people with low self-esteem don't react like people with healthy self-esteem. You know, you get a reaction from people with low self-esteem that you don't expect. And it's much more complicated.
I think some people have trouble admitting that they have it, too.
Yes, that's really
especially
a problem.
Especially maybe men.
Men more than women, but even women. I sold books at a conference years ago, and never even thought about this beforehand, but one of the men came up to me and he said, do you have a sack? Because as you know, Eva, the book is red, Uh-huh. And he didn't want to be seen carrying that book around that said Breaking the Chain of Low Self-Esteem. And I hadn't even thought about that. That was one of the first times that I sold books and I didn't have any sacks there. The women, if they were embarrassed by it, they would stick it in their big purses.
Uh-huh.
But this man didn't have anything to do with it. And somebody told me once that they were in a park here in Portland, and there was a man sitting reading, and this person sat down by him on a bench, and he had like put a paper over the cover. But anyway, they started talking, and I think she said, "What are you reading?" And he told her, but he had it covered up so nobody could see. But people are embarrassed to admit they have low self-esteem, and I tried it. One of the first things I say to people is, "You didn't cause this. You don't need to be embarrassed by it. You didn't cause it. You didn't make it happen. You don't want to have it. You wouldn't have it if you had a choice. You know, so it isn't something that you did. You're not responsible for it. But now you are responsible for getting over it."
So now tell us, what can we do? Because it is a painful thing to live with, and it's a painful thing to watch your loved ones suffer.
Yes, it's very painful. Well, first of all, you have to learn. When I get a new client in, I tell them there's two pieces. The first one is, it's important to recognize how you got it. Where did it come from? And a lot of people will say to me, "Well, you know, you say it comes from childhood, but I had a really good childhood." Well, you know, what we have had in childhood is the only thing we know. So we don't know if we had a good childhood. Mm-hmm. We may have gone over to friends' houses, and we may have seen the way their parents acted, and we may have wished that some of it was like ours, but we don't think that it was all that traumatic a lot of times. Now, if somebody was sexually abused, physically abused, those are obvious things that have happened to you. But most people have low self-esteem, got it through more subtle ways, through criticism, sarcasm, being ignored and not giving enough attention, not getting affection, not getting compliments, not getting support in school or in activities. A lot of clients say, "My parents never came to any of my activities." And I think, how sad. And so a lot of it develops in ways that people don't realize are factors for developing low self-esteem. So first of all, I say to them, we have to figure out how you got this. You know, what caused it to develop the way it did, that you think this way of yourself. And it usually doesn't take too long to work that out. Now, my workbook helps a lot with that. So one of the things, after reading the first book, if people want to do, is that the workbook asks you all kinds of questions about your childhood and your life that you fill in the blanks if you want to. Now, some people hate doing workbooks, so don't do it if you hate doing workbooks. But otherwise, it's a big help if you don't know how you got your low self-esteem.
Okay. So if someone has low self-esteem, I'll use my own self, for example, and we have children who we recognize as having low self-esteem after reading your book,
uh-huh.
How do you deal with teenagers to help them, and then how do you deal with small children to help them? It's going to be different, I would imagine, if the teenager's conditioned for so long.
Well, it's really difficult. I have to be honest with you. It's really difficult for people to do this on their own because my program is individualized. I have a basic way of dealing with these issues, and I'll try and talk to you some about that. But it is very much individualized to each person.
Mm-hmm.
And what I do is I retrain them in their thinking to help them see that they're only telling themselves things that are based on fact, truth, or history. People with low self-esteem tell themselves stories. They make up stories. They don't know they're doing it. They walk down the hall, meet the boss in the hall, as they're walking down the hall at work, and the boss doesn't speak to them. And they say to themselves, "Uh-oh, she's really angry with me. Oh, I must have made a mistake. You know, I may be going to get fired today." Now, that's a story. There's no basis mm-hmm. for it. Because I can give them 20 reasons why the boss maybe didn't speak to them. But mm-hmm. they choose the one that's negative about themselves. I could say it could be that the boss, I say to them, maybe your boss had a was in a fender bender on the way to work and is concerned about that. Maybe she got a bill in the mail she wasn't expecting. Maybe she just got a call from the school that her child is sick. Maybe she got called to a meeting. Maybe she's making some big decision about some purchases she's going to make, you know, so she's just thinking of other things. But there could be so many reasons why that person didn't speak to them that has nothing to do with them. But when we have low self-esteem, we think that everything that goes on around us is about us. So if I walk in the room and people quit laughing and I have low self-esteem, I think they must have been talking about me.
Right.
You know, so we personalize things. We make everything about us.
It's just so interesting how you've pinpointed all of this. You're the first person I've ever heard that's gotten it all together in a group and put it down on a piece of paper. There was one other thing I thought that was really interesting. You talked about tests or hidden agendas of the person with the low self-esteem for other people.
Right, right.
That was really interesting.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, it's like without realizing that we're doing it, we have certain expectations of other people. And so we have this agenda. And it's like I've got these examples, and I would encourage people to get a copy of my book, and because the examples, I think most people can relate to some of the examples. If
absolutely.
Not most of them.
Yeah. I could, and I hate to admit it, but I could.
But so there's one situation in there where this woman decides that, you know, she wants her husband to give her a surprise birthday party. And so she basically throws out all these clues and cues for him to pick up the idea that she wants this to happen. He takes her to the beach for the weekend. We're not very too far from the ocean here. And so he takes her to the beach, and she's thinking all along, okay, when we get home, there's going to be this big surprise birthday party, because I've, you know, hinted around.
Mm-hmm.
So they come home, and the story is much longer than this, but anyway, they come home, and so they drive up to the house, and she's looking around for the cars. You know, where is everybody parking? Oh, they must have parked around the block so that I wouldn't see the cars. So they get ready, and he says, well, go on in, I'll be there. And she says, no, I'll wait for you, because he wants him to come in with her when everybody jumps up and hollers surprise. And so then they get in the door, and there is no party. And she is just, you know, devastated, because she had this agenda, but she didn't really clearly tell him about it. And, of course, it wouldn't have quite been a surprise. But anyway, and we do this when we have low self-esteem. We have expectations of other people, and we have these agendas. And then when they don't fulfill our agenda, we're very disappointed. But we didn't even let them know what it was. And so we expect them to do it by just the fact that we've thrown out some clues, possibly, or just that they should know what we want from them. And so, you know, we're afraid to tell them because we think they should know, and then we test them to wait and see if, in fact, they're really going to do it. And then when they don't do this thing that we think they should have known to do, then we're upset with them.
Setting ourselves up to fail.
It kind of gets crazy-making after a while.
Mm-hmm. There's one thing I'd like for you to talk about. There's a section in your book where you call it confrontation. There are a lot of sections in here, but it tells about how to deal with somebody when you're having a disagreement and that person has low self-esteem, to keep it from getting worse and to make the, you talk about, let's see, and the partner can stay calm, recognizing that it is a self-esteem attack, that it's a cry for love and acceptance. So maybe give us a few tips about how to deal with somebody when they're having those things happen.
Well, especially if the person, if they've acknowledged they have low self-esteem, I oftentimes ask them if they want to have their partner come in with them, because the person can be helpful. And once, and if they're both present for some of the sessions, I can teach the partner some skills, and I can teach the low self-esteem person to accept that, and that they can work together when that happens, so that the partner can help the self-esteem person overcome this. But basically, if you recognize that the person is having a self-esteem attack, or that they're getting really defensive, you know, this is not a good time to really push it. I mean, I think you have to say, you have to use some softening words, like, you know, I'm not saying that you did something terrible here. You know, you can encourage it. You can just say that I just wanted to point out that, you know, I was bothered that you shared this thing I told you about with so-and-so. And so it's like really being sensitive to what they're going through. When they get defensive, you know, if you sometimes just need to back off and come at it later at a different time in the way you can do it. But it's remember that what's going on in the person's mind, I think that's the important thing, is to recognize what's going on in their mind, which is they are making the situation much bigger than it is. And when they start overreacting, then we just have to be really sensitive. You know, I use a lot of humor in my therapy with people. And of course, I kind of know how they're thinking. You know, I had low self-esteem for years and years and years, and my first task was to figure out how to get over it, and in the process to try and figure out how to help other people get over it. So, you know, I know how difficult all this is.
So do you still have to deal with it, or is it gone?
Do I personally? No, it's not gone. I don't think it's ever gone. I tell my clients, I think I can help you get over this 98%. Because we can never know what triggers may come into our lives. So that something can happen to trigger something that happened in my past, and I can't be prepared for that.
Mm-hmm.
But I can get over it very quickly. So I no longer have the self-esteem attacks. I don't have, I seldom ever have any kind of a self-esteem reaction.
Now, do you have somebody to work with you, or did you do it by yourself?
I did this by myself. I didn't know anybody that knew anything about it.
Right.
And unfortunately, I get emails every week from people in different parts of the country and overseas asking me for referrals to therapists. But unfortunately, most therapists do not work with low self-esteem. It isn't taught in many of our schools. And they don't really understand what it is. And so by the time people call me, oftentimes they have seen two or three therapists locally and have not gotten any help. And they, you know, are quite discouraged about that. They feel like they've spent, you know, years of their lives
running around the
thousands
bush.
Of dollars.
So I want to, we've got about 12 minutes. I want you to talk, I've got two questions here. I want you to talk a little bit about assertive, passive, aggressive, and passive aggressive.
Okay.
But I also want to know about insurance billing. I mean, does the billing codes recognize this for what it is?
Well, there is no diagnosis for low self-esteem in the diagnostic manual.
Needs to be.
Right. I believe that it is a disorder. But instead of it being a disorder in the diagnostic manual, it is considered a symptom of probably 30 or more disorders. Well, you know, I don't think depression, I mean, there's chronic depression, that's a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, I don't think depression is a symptom of low self-esteem. Low self-esteem, I said that wrong. I don't think low self-esteem is a symptom of depression. I think it's the other way around.
Right.
You know,
I mean, you really get it, and somebody needs to listen to you about this. This book
well,
is amazing.
Well, a few people are starting to, and I'm just hoping that they do before I die someday. So the work goes on. That's kind of one of my big concerns. And it's just unfortunate. It's unfortunate that therapists don't know about this and so forth. But anyway, back to so the insurance thing, when I work with people long distance, I mean, I can give them a diagnosis that's totally acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
Because any of the anxiety disorders are really about low self-esteem. So, you know, for myself, I oftentimes give people generalized anxiety disorder as a diagnosis, or it could be social phobia even, because sometimes that's the situation. But most of the anxiety disorders can be appropriate diagnosis for this.
But I would imagine that treating for self-esteem versus treating for something else would take longer, and it needs a code.
Oh, yeah, there's a code for it.
For low self-esteem, I mean.
Well, no, not for, you'd have to use the anxiety code. It depends all on your insurance, okay?
Uh-huh.
Now, I've had really good insurance, and the kind of insurance that I have would have covered that for just as it would have any other diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that it's going to cover in any way less than it would cover, your insurance would cover for something else.
Okay. That, I mean, I, just from thinking about it, it seems like it could take a very long time.
Well, I tell people to consider a minimum of a year. Now, most people stay with me longer than that because they feel really good about what they've accomplished and they want to keep going.
Yeah.
So they don't feel like they're quite there yet. But some people, you know, don't. They do their year and they feel like they've gotten to the place. And I've had a few people that have really, really were able to stop before that. But they were really, really determined and persevering. I do want to say just something else about my program.
Okay, go ahead. Say anything you want. You can have the last few minutes if you want to talk about what you want to talk
about. Well, it's just that, you know, I do have a program for recovery, and I believe that this is the only way that you can get over this. I mean, obviously, you can read my book, and I think that it will speak to you in ways that probably other self-esteem books haven't. At least that's the feedback I get. That's the only thing I can go by. And I've sold tens of thousands of books of these. So, anyway. But I think reading it is really important because it really gives you the basics. It gives you a basic overview that will help you understand what it is that's going on inside of you. And then I think you need some direction and you need some help. And generally there isn't anybody else there to help you. You know, your spouse doesn't understand it. Your best friend doesn't understand it. You know, there just isn't anyone else in your life. So I am here, and I, you know, I love doing this. I love trying to help people get over this because I know how much it's changed my own life. And there is hope that, you know, you can have a better life and that you can quit doing the self-sabotaging things that you're doing and develop better social skills and have a really good, positive life. So, you know, I just encourage people to keep working at it as best you can because I know how it's a very serious problem.
It really is.
Society understands.
Why don't you give everybody your contact information again?
Okay. My website is www.getesteem, that's GETESTEEM.com. My email is mjsorensen, SORENSEN, at getesteem.com. You can also find all that on the contact page on the website. And my phone number is 503-941-9433.
And you can work with patients long distance. They don't have to come and see you.
Right. I mean, I do intensive. Sometimes people want to fly here and spend 2 or 3 days. As long as people have to come and stay as long as 2 weeks. But that's not necessary generally. But if people want to and they want to do it faster, why, we can do that. Generally, yeah, people work with me by phone. And,
that's really great.
Yeah.
It really is.
It's very wonderful for me. I speak with people from a lot of different countries and different cultures and different states, and it's very fascinating for me to work with everybody.
And your book, is it on Amazon, or do they get it on your webpage?
It's on Amazon. It's in most Barnes & Noble stores, other bookstores. If somebody doesn't have it, they can order it. They can get all of the books off of my website if they want, because I do offer discounts and free shipping within the United States, and discounts, and then they have to pay for their own shipping if they're in other countries.
Okay. Anything else you want to talk about before we hang up?
Well, I just thank you for giving me the opportunity, because I just know that so many people do not really understand this and are out there suffering from it, and I feel really bad about that. And this is my life work. This has been very important to me, and so I just encourage people to read the book just because it can help you out, I think.
It's an amazing book.
Thank you.
I mean, it's like I said, it's one of those ahas where you feel like somebody understands what you feel.
Well, I get that feedback. I've just been astounded. I mean, I feel quite fortunate to have figured this out, because those are the emails I get of people just saying, I don't know how you knew this about me. So, and thank you, Eva, for this opportunity.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Marilyn. You can come back sometime if you want.
I'd be glad
to have you.
I do want to tell you, if I have just a second, I got an email this afternoon from someone in Florida saying, I know you're going to be on the radio tonight, but I don't know if I can get the station. So I wanted to email you.
Well, I can, when this is, my producer will post it in a couple of days.
Uh-huh.
And I can give you a link and put it on your webpage.
Oh, cool. Very cool.
So,
I want everybody to hear it that wants to hear it, because it's such a great book, and you know so much about it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for doing what you've done.
Thank you very much.
Good night, Marilyn, and come back.
Good night. Okay. Bye-bye.